Hey everyone, we'll get you to the show in a second. Just want to give you the heads up about our latest Red Men Plus special offer. If you want even more Liverpool content in your lives, both in video and podcast forms, simply head to redmenplus.com. And if you sign up as a yearly captain subscriber and use the promo code RACE, R-A-C-E, you'll get 50% off a yearly subscription. So yeah, that'll get you covered for the rest of this amazing season, the search for a new manager, the summer transfer window, and pretty much all of the new manager's first season as well. So yeah, redmenplus.com, yearly captain subscription, promo code RACE, and get 50% off. I'll see you all over there. Hope you enjoy this podcast that's about to start right now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello everyone, it is the final word. Liverpool beat Southampton by 2-1 down at St Mary's. I'm your host Paul Machin. I'm joined by Tom Dutton, by Jack Gill and by John Reid as well for this one. Let's dive straight into it then, Tom. I think boil it down from the very top here. There's plenty of discussion points to get stuck into, but it's 3 points we all very much would have taken on, you know, in the days between the Super Cup and this, when we were saying Liverpool are tired, yeah. Liverpool are going to be fatigued, Liverpool are going to have a real struggle in this game. And although the scoreline made it a bit more of a struggle ultimately, it again, 3 points was all that mattered.
It was, and especially looking at all the fixtures around the league, there was the City Spurs one. You knew one of your rivals was going to drop points. Turns out they both did, and you're looking at it and thinking, we need to make a mark here. We need to keep going on, and it was a test. I remember saying in the build up, it's a test of, it's another one. You go in there, you've won a trophy. What's your mentality going to be? Yeah. You've got to go out there and do it again. Yes, yeah. you've sealed something this season, but you need to go out there. Go again. It turns out it was quite hard for us to go again. That first half we did struggle, and we'll speak about that. But it was another test that Liverpool have overcome and made up for.
I agree, and there's so many factors going into this, Jack. I say the fatigue, the turnaround time. I think Jürgen Klopp played it brilliantly in the pre-match press conference. They're like, I'm not making excuses about all this. I'll talk about it after the fact. Our aim was to go and win. But Tom mentioned it there. You've gone and won silverware. It's been a ludicrously intense couple of weeks of the season. You know, like, that was our third game of the season. We've been through two penalty shootouts already. As a fan, I was goosed, let alone, you know, the lads who ran around for 120 minutes.
Yeah, I think it was a stupid decision to have extra time in the Super Cup. And I think, I mean, Klopp's got that problem, hasn't he? Whenever he has a problem with something and comes out and says he's got a problem, he gets all the, he's moaning again, blah, 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 he's making excuses. So I think Klopp did the right thing being quiet, and I think it was a difficult game, and Southampton obviously wanted to bounce back. They lost 3-0 to Burnley the week before, and I think we did well to weather the storm, really, and 3 points is all we needed.
Yeah, it was. We spoke on, I think it was the Final Word Show last week, when we had Kieran Gethin in, John, and he's obviously a Welsh boxing champion, and talked about that mentality of, once you've won something, there's a temptation to be like, sit back and admire it. Whereas that was the thing that would have been. It doesn't take the Super Cup off yet. No one goes into the Champions Wall in Melwood and prizes the number four off or whatever. But it would. You start to think it's for nothing because, you know, you don't have an open top bus parade. There's not 750,000 people lining the streets to celebrate the Super Cup. It's something that you celebrate really at the end of the season when you've had a good entire campaign. It's for naught because we all know the Premier League's the big one, and we had to go there and we had to pick ourselves up and not let celebrations get too carried away and go and win the game.
We do, and I think this team's in a weird position because I think, like, you look at, or certainly you hear old fellas go on about, like, how hard it is to win leagues, you know, the fellas who got on a match when we last won the title and stuff, and I think you forget that, like, this is the hardest thing, like, that any team's ever had to do, because no team's ever had to you know, like literally win every game to win the league. And that's the, unfortunately for us, that's the era of football we're in, where we've got a team like City, you know, who are constantly just winning games and stuff and rolling teams over. But, you know, it's hard to, I think, you know, for all the reasons I think everyone knows, like, you know, the summer we've had, the pre-season, all the international tournaments and stuff, to just keep putting minutes into people's legs and stuff. And, you know, we've got that weird Swedo derby thing with Southampton as well, because of like the players and stuff we bought off them.
Oh,
and
God, Southampton fans hate Liverpool. I've mentioned this on the in the past. I'm going to a family wedding in a week or so's time, and the husband to be of my sister-in-law, his mum and dad are rabid Southampton fans, and at the engagement party they accuse Liverpool of raping them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That's nice. Not what rape is, by the way. That's prostitution.
I love all that, because me and Ross were there, and they were booing Van Dijk every single time. We were like, sorry, best centre back in the world. So we just started singing. Lallana would have been on there. We would have sang a song for Lallana.
That's the worst.
That's the thing, Lallana, Lovren.
Sorry, what would you Lallana song have
been? I mean, just go to
Lallana.
Yeah, probably. We would have made one up on the spot. But I think that's something that I want to speak about, it is the away atmosphere. First away season, or a first away game of the season. And you look at Anfield and just...
Hang on, I've just been to Turkey, and I've been to
Premier League.
First home away.
In terms of Anfield and welcoming them back there, it's all the away lads who go there every single week in, week out. And it didn't stop, it was great. I mean, obviously once they scored, we had a little lull as Southampton was around us on both sides and gave us a cheer. But it was just nice to get that back. Really nice to get that back, and all the Southampton fans were having fights in the stands. You couldn't see on telly, but it was great. We were like, but it was just a joyous atmosphere, and one I think everyone can take heart from that and go, right, there's your home win, there's your away win in the Premier League.
Yep.
We know we can do it now. Mm-hmm. Carry on.
I think one thing you forget, just especially with it still being the start of the season, is I think like over the summer we're all in each other's heads, aren't we? And you know, Champions League aside and stuff, which was brilliant, and most of us were delirious for 6 weeks. Like you're all in each other's heads, and you forget that, like, you know, we haven't signed a player, all this stuff going on, and you're like, these lads are actually really good at football. Like, you forget that we're actually an elite football team.
Yeah.
And like getting to see, you know, like we've obviously got a few issues which I'm sure we'll come on to in terms of things at the minute, still working out the defence certainly, but like seeing them, you know, in the flesh, you forget how good they are and stuff. And like, these are the type of performances where you think, oh yeah, you know, because these are the type of performances that historically for us have been the difference between us being top four, maybe top six, to being up at the far end of the table.
Well, let's talk about it, because we made changes to the team, John, and let's look at it in terms of the midfield first and foremost. I'm not sure that midfield's played together since probably like City in the Champions League quarterfinals season before last. You know, Oxlade-Chamberlain got injured against Roma in the next. I mean, he might have played the next game or whatever, but you know, Genie holding Ox back in there, back in midfield, which is great to see. You know, we were forced to make changes there, and I like the attitude to those changes. Was midfield, you've got no choice, because Fabinho and Henderson have played 120 mins and done the pens as well. So you need to keep them fresh. We've got the options to bring in there, certainly. I like, let's talk about Ox next, but also I like that the front three, you just went, right lads, you're all in this together. No one's more important than anyone else. You're all going to take another spin and you're all going to go again. We'll pick back up on that again, but let's talk Oxlade-Chamberlain first. I thought, not a brilliant performance, but I thought a very encouraging one.
It was, yeah, and I think it helped as well, especially with Milner, with the injury and stuff, that like he... I'd seen bits from the manager in the week where he said like he'd felt a bit mean on him in the Super Cup, kind of putting him where he put him and stuff, kind of like slightly out there and out wide and stuff. But I thought he had a good game, and you know, you've got to temper everything. I think with the fact that he's still coming back from a really, really long layoff and stuff, and he hasn't played competitive football for like 16 months or something stupid or something mad. And it was just nice to see him finding his way. You know, he didn't sustain it for the 90 minutes, but he was showing the flashes of what we all know he can do and what we've missed, that kind of like player between the lines who kind of links play, and it can be quite cute with the ball. And it makes me, you know, I've had a bit of fun this summer on Twitter having a go at people who keep saying we should have signed Coutinho back. But it's nice seeing that we've got a player within the squad who can do that, because I think even though you've got someone like Lallana who's, you know, seems almost absent from the squad most weeks now, like having someone like Chamberlain who can do that, and I can run as well. You know, Lallana's biggest thing I think has always been his lack of pace, so having someone like Chamberlain back in and around the squad and thinking, look, that's a different option. That's something that we can do that we haven't had for most of 18 months.
It's Jack. He was in and out of the game. I think it's fair. There's times the spells where he disappears, but it's hard for us to wrap our heads around this sometimes because he was out for a year. He missed an entire year's football. And I think our base logic is we see a lad in training, we see him in pre-season, and we presume, okay, there you go, he's just back. But he's not the level of intensity that's required. You know, you see, that's why footballers come into the Premier League from all different kind of situations and backgrounds, different leagues, different ages or what have you. And most of the players that come into the Premier League don't succeed in the Premier League, or at least not to the true elite level. So that's why I use the word encouraging, because I think he came in and he found his footing really well.
Yeah, I think most people were shocked when we first signed Chamberlain, obviously the price tag at first, and we actually signed him. I think everyone was quite shocked to see him join Liverpool. And I think when he first came in, he played really well for us, and obviously he had the long layoff. And last season, he seemed to be that sort of player that we were missing, that eight who can create, who can score. And I think it will take time with him. He has had a long layoff, and it will take him time to get back. But I do think it was really encouraging to see him back. I think playing in the Super Cup, obviously not in his position, people started to wonder whether...
Well, Klopp mentioned in his pre for Southampton that, like, 45 minutes, look, it wasn't a good performance, but it was minutes in his legs. Yeah. And in some regards, I would, because he could have played Shaqiri, you know, and he could have switched things around. Shaqiri would have been a more natural, maybe natural fit. He's played far more and more successfully in the front three. But you start to look at that performance and go, he knew he couldn't drop Chamberlain cold into the middle of midfield. So in some regards, the Super Cup performance actually makes a little bit more sense if you group them together.
Yeah, I think it will take time with him. And I think, obviously, I think Keita getting injured so early in the season has been a killer for us, because I think maybe this is one of the games where he'd have played over Ox, or at least after maybe 60 minutes we'd have brought Keita on and given Ox a rest. But I think right now with Naby out, I think we've got no option but to play Ox, because he's the only real spark of creativity.
Particularly
out there.
When Henderson needs
Yeah, exactly.
I think the most encouraging thing for me is, obviously, it took him a while to get into the game, and the first half we weren't great, but the team as a whole wasn't fantastic. Mm-hmm. As soon as Southampton started getting a bit tired, started dropping off a bit, you saw how good he was with a team where you've got to break him down. It's really, really crisp passing, which, to be honest, it's taken him a while to get that back. Yeah. In pre-season, his passing was dreadful at times, and then you see him just picking the ball up, one-touch stuff, being confident enough to keep hold of the ball and run rings around the man.
He introduced a few of the tricks and flicks as well.
Exactly.
Because me and my dad were watching the game together, and we discussed this, is that I think he's playing within himself for most of the game.
Yeah.
And you're right, it's like that moment when it's like breaking through scar tissue. You may be a little unsure, you don't want to fully extend yourself. And then once you find you, and you go, okay. And he did it, and he, his level actually went up once he started doing a bit more of the flash and flare.
Definitely. And I think, look, we're talking about it being encouraging and bigger signs. I think we'll see in the next games to come, is when he starts coming on, hopefully he comes in raring to go like that, and he can just take the game by the scruff of the neck. He's going to be a player that we bring in and go, affect the game, lad, do something. And whether that's from the start or whether that's from when he comes off, but he is an integral part of that attack. You've got to look at that front three, and obviously we'll speak about them, but just how good and how fluid they already are is going to help him massively in terms of going, right, all I need to do is fit in with them, and I'll be at a top class level. Having them players around is massive.
Well, Gini Wijnaldum mentioned it in pre-season, John, about how, in fact, at the end of the season, in fact, leading up to the Champions League final, about how he fights for his place. And he said, you know, everyone makes everyone else better. And at the moment, and in fact, funnily enough, Oxlade-Chamberlain was laughing about it in his interview with Chris, which is on the redmentv.com, by the way, come check that out. He's come back from injury, and there's the skipper sat in his position. Jordan Henderson's been basically flawless since he's moved to that role. And I look at that from two ways. From Oxlade-Chamberlain, it must be a bit like, oh, but, hey, listen, if he wants to be better in that position than Jordan Henderson, then fucking hell, we're going to have some incredible options.
Well, and, you know, it helps, you know, as you say, like, it helps other lads, as in it helps other lads push themselves, but it also, I think it gives us an extra layer of things. You know, I think a lot of people would look at someone like an Origi and go, where does he fit? Mm-hmm. Like, how do we... What, we've got to change our setup to get something better out of him, but you shouldn't think, well, if you've got him up front and you've maybe got a Chamberlain behind them, say, you know, from midfield, and, you know, maybe a Shaqiri or whatever the options are, all of a sudden then rotating the front three does seem a bit easier, you know what I mean? Then you can suddenly go, well, actually, yeah, we're going to play a different way of football, but we've got the midfield options to make the numbers up and stuff. Yeah. And I think Tom touches on a really good point, actually, in terms of his recovery. I think, like, not just his attitude to come back and be like, I've got to be better than Henderson now to get in this team. Just his attitude to go in and do stuff. Because, as you say, I think, like, you come back from a long layoff and you can maybe go into tackles a bit gingerly and think, oh, I don't really want to. And he didn't have any of that. He just came on and was committed, and maybe he was lacking for fitness or something, you know what I mean? But his attitude, I thought, was outstanding. And you know, like I say, it can only help us, you know, get through these games when, you know, we're maybe not all at peak fitness.
Absolutely. I think it gives us another option as well, because obviously Oxlade-Chamberlain and Henderson, although they play in the same position, they're two completely different style players. And I do think the sort of Oxlade-Chamberlain sort of style player we were missing last season. I think Keita obviously took a long time to adjust to the Premier League, and I think Oxlade-Chamberlain can be a really special player for us this season. I think it is going to take him time, but I think he will be a very important player for us.
I completely agree, and as I say, very, very encouraging indeed. We were a bit shit in the first half.
We were terrible. We had cracks everywhere. I was too much for talking about good performance. We were really, really, really poor. Like, somehow they were breaking through. They had the runners over the top. Joe Matip kept getting caught out, and he had an all right game. But yeah, they should have scored two, probably, in that first half. To be honest, we're looking at the scoreline. We got lucky, yeah. Mm-hmm. We really did get lucky, and they could have easily won that if they take all their chances. Obviously, it's that header with a brilliant ball in. We just kept getting caught out, and they were overloading, but there were so many times I was looking at it and going, we need to drop in, or there wasn't enough talking at the back stick with Trent and Matip. And I was thinking, if he makes that run, Matip doesn't know about it because Trent's not telling him, but Trent's got this other man over there. And I think we've got to be really, we were speaking about it, and we've got to be careful about these teams just throwing stuff at us.
Yeah.
And just going, right, we're going at the European champions here because they want to win.
Yeah.
Obviously, it opens up gaps, but the way they pressed high up, the new Adrian's coming in, you've got to pressure all them passes and he'll mess it up.
I think this is the best time of the season to play Liverpool, really.
Yeah.
Before we're properly established, you know, if we're looking to make tweaks and changes, and Chris did some interesting stuff on stats and tactics on this last week. Si Hughes has written some stuff about it. Lots of people talking about the way Liverpool are set up defensively and in midfield and what have you. That we look a little bit more suspect at the moment. Now the theory is that the Klopp's doing a couple of things. Is that he's trying to keep who we've got on their toes so they don't get complacent, and also this might be part of a transition into us being an even more offensive possession based team. Yeah. But it does leave us a touch open going the other way, and you're right, it makes for difficult watching. I think there's probably a number of ways of looking at it, but I don't know whether, like, Van Dijk getting caught out, it gets beaten in the air a couple of times. There's one particular, I think it's the Maya Yoshida, is it header that Adrian makes a save from?
Great save, yeah.
He's caught flat-footed completely on there, which is something that is very uncharacteristically, isn't very Virgil Van Dijk.
Yeah, and I spoke about the team getting better second half. We did, once we weathered that storm, then Van Dijk came into his own, that little flick when the ball's coming over the shoulder and he just flicks it back into midfield. There's so many times when, as a team, we just raised up our level and Southampton visibly tired, and we went, okay, we're knackered, but they're more tired than us. How is this happening? We are a good side, and once we got that mentality through, but there's going to be more moments in this Premier League campaign where teams are going to go at us, we're going to be knackered, and we're going to have to weather the storm, and that's down to Van Dijk. And I don't know whether it's because he doesn't have Alisson behind him and he didn't have Fabinho in front of him, whether he's not out of sorts, but he's like, I don't exactly know what these players are going to do. Mm-hmm. So he's focusing on their game a bit too much.
Well, to be fair, we played Norwich and he had Alisson behind, until he got injured, he had Alisson behind him and Fabinho in front of him, and they were still getting in. Yeah. So it's I mean, John, it is a... I mentioned this on the news show on Friday with Chris, and the danger of this talking about a high line without really diving into the nuts and bolts of it all, it's in danger of becoming a bit of a catch-all phrase, and it's become a generalised talking point that we don't fully understand. So I don't know. I tend to look at it and say, kind of that that midfield's completely new that we've put out there. I think the change of goalkeeper doesn't make things any easier, certainly. And again, it's so early in the season. I'm not. There'll be people desperate to find holes and things to moan about and things to complain about in Liverpool's performances, but it's the second league game of the season. If Liverpool are like this in the second to last league game of the season, then it's a fundamental flaw in how they're playing. But at the minute, you know, I would look at it and go, there's plenty of little bits and pieces that can be tweaked about the performance.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it wasn't, you know, a 10 out of 10 performance. I don't think anyone was asking for that, really. And I think, you know, credit where credit's due, we've got to say Southampton were really good, you know what I mean? And we can almost be guilty, I think, of expecting us, you know, of like expecting us to just be the best team in the world now, yeah. because we've won the European Cup. And you know, we forget that like season starts slowly, you know what I mean? Even last season, you know, we were winning games quite comfortably, but it was
people forget. I've seen a few people saying this actually, of like, oh well, last season blah blah blah, people have very short memories. And we had this the season before when everyone was going, well, Liverpool aren't attacking like they did last season. Like, Liverpool started the season pretty, you know, pretty averagely. People always talk about the season before, and they what they've got in their heads is the final 6 weeks. Yeah. They forget that we weren't blowing teams away this time. We started strong into West Ham, and then we ground out results and drew a few and had some dodgy defensive moments, etc., etc.
Yeah, you know, and you forget like exactly that we weren't swashbuckling. You know, the kind of buzz around the team at the time back then was the fact that we had Joe Gomez and Van Dijk at the back, and then we were like, Christ, these are brilliant. You know what I mean? But it's going to take a time. It'll take time for that, and you know, I think. Like I say, they seemed really up for it. And, you know, you look at maybe what their pre-season's been, he's took them somewhere mad in Europe, hasn't he? Hasn't he? Well, he took them really, took them abroad somewhere. And, you know, he's drilled them to be that fit and to get the best out of the lads who he's got. We were operating, I think, on muscle memory. But, again, that shows you, as Tom says, like, as we grew into the game, that shows you that's all still there. And, you know, Klopp's not had the time with these lads to be on the training pitch, you know, as a whole unit, as a 25-man squad, to go through all these things. So we're going to have performances like this, and it's almost where, you know, we need as a fan base to kind of get the team through it, because they're going to, you know, now the Super Cup's out the way, and, you know, kind of like, you know, the summer and stuff's done, like, we can just bed into the season now, from now till Christmas, essentially. You know, there's not many extra games really compared to last season, other than the Club
World
Cup.
When you get into a natural rhythm, and to be fair, we're about to enter the first time, probably, with the exception of like the week leading up to the first game. Obviously, Friday kickoff slightly skews this, but we've been playing at least two games a week all summer.
Yeah.
You're right, we're going to start against that. But the kind of thing I was driving at before, Jack, is that this is the perfect time to play Liverpool if you're a team that's got a bit of ability and, you know, harbours some attacking ambition, because you might as well just throw everything at us, because there's no shame in getting battered off the pitch by the European champions. There's no shame in that in any way, shape or form. So no one will begrudge getting spanked by Liverpool. However, we are not quite at the peak of our powers yet. We're still, and Klopp himself said, you know, looking at 2 months before you really hit your stride in a season. So you might as well. There's going to come a point where there's nothing, the teams will go, ooh, we'll just have a go at Liverpool, and they'll have a go, and we will just absolutely paste someone as a result, because we will be full fit and firing. But that's kind of what I was saying about this is kind of a good time to play us, because while we're not the impenetrable super team, take some pot shots, because you've got nothing to lose.
I think it was set up perfectly for Southampton this game. I think obviously it's their first home game of the season. They're playing against a team who have played 120 minutes on Wednesday night. I think obviously everyone knew our defence is a bit shaky at the minute. We've got Adrian in goal. I think obviously Fabinho was never going to play after his cramp at the end of the Super Cup. And I think for them, it was set up perfectly for them to react to the 3-0 defeat to Burnley. And I think they did exactly that. I think they played really well. I was a bit naive in the week. I wanted us to rest players for Arsenal. But I think looking into it, Klopp did very well to pick one of our strongest teams, because I think we had to really looking at what happened.
And to be fair, a week between games for Jurgen Klopp Liverpool side is basically a holiday. Yeah. Like, you mean, that's almost ideal. Let's talk about the front three, Tom, because like I said earlier, I thought it was a really intelligent decision from Klopp. I think it showed how much this game mattered.
Yeah.
That he just went to the lads, thanks very much for all your hard work in midweek. Congratulations on winning the game. You're all playing again, because you're all in this together. Everyone's a bit sore. Everyone's a bit tired. But go out there and go and put this game to bed. And, you know, it did take a little while to get going. But, like, Sadio Mane, the second he bangs that one in, you realise that's the difference. We don't need to be the best Liverpool when you've got those three lads on the pitch.
You're looking at it, and you speak about it in commentary. I watched it back, and he went, that's the difference in quality. That one little move by Sadio Mane, that's why he's moved from Southampton to Liverpool, because that's what you've got to be at this club. And I think Klopp's just looked at this front three and gone, look, yes, we are tired, we've got a week after this, you can have your break, you know what I mean? I'd take it and that's fine. But when them front three players are playing like that, obviously it takes a while, but there's some of the touches, some of the flicks, some of the movements, and it is Sadio Mane just played everyone off the park. I know Bobby Firmino had some great moments as well, but Sadio Mane sets up that Bobby Firmino one. Yeah. Sadio Mane sets up the Robbo one when he comes down the wing and plays that, and it's all so, it's all top class. Yeah. We're looking at Sadio Mane and his progression through being this amazing player. We bring him in, he's Liverpool's main man, then you get shafted to the side because Salah comes in. Then everyone realises that Bobby Firmino is the thing that makes everything tick. And then Sadio Mane is on the wayside and he's going, no, look at me. Yeah. Look at what I can do on a football pitch. I can ping one in to far corner like Mo Salah. I can be this intricate passer like Bobby Firmino. And I can always go down the wing and beat a man. I have everything that you need in an attacking player. He's amazing.
We've gone through this season like Community Shield. I know we missed a bag full of chances, but Salah was brilliant in the Community Shield. He was just everywhere. He was constantly in, causing a threat. And then it's like, well, Salah's our best player. And then the Super Cup, Firmino comes on at half time and he changes the game. You're like, no, well, come on, Bobby Firmino's our best player. Yeah. And then Southampton, you're right, Sadio Mane's at the heart of all the best stuff that we do. And you're like, might be Sadio Mane, he's a blessed player. And there's not many football clubs, I think, in the world who have that debate. I mean, you look at Manchester City, it's Kevin De Bruyne. And there'll be games where you can go, okay, Sterling or Aguero, but really, De Bruyne is there, isn't he? Whereas for them, it's the old wrestling, as if the left one don't get you, then the right one will, or the guy through the middle as well. And then, you know, with the potential from someone like Oxlade-Chamberlain or Keita potentially to break out from midfield as well. The way he strikes that ball, it looks like he just smacks it, like, you know, like he just, like a bit like the Mo Salah Chelsea goal. You watch it back, doesn't bend it. He bends it, like he hits it as hard as you can possibly hit a football, but with curl at the same time. It's just an incredible strike.
Oh no, it was brilliant. It was it had shades of Coutinho, which is weird. And like Tom says, you know, front three, you know, you forget that he could almost play attack and mid if he wanted to. Sadio Mane, you know, the way he takes the ball and the positions he gets himself in, often, like, you know, when he comes inside. But it was just a phenomenal goal, and you know, to do that, having not had a brilliant, not him, but the team, not had a brilliant half of football, to do that at the end of it, and to have three men come towards him trying to tackle him, all wanting to go put 2 feet through him, was just brilliant. And
it was vintage, I think, what Klopp's Liverpool have become. You know, and yes, we rode our luck, so I don't think Klopp would have us ride our luck as much as we did. Yeah. But how many times over the last 2 years we've like not been brilliant in a first half, but we've either gotten to half time 0-0, or we've nicked one right at the end of the half. And particularly when you nick that late first half goal, all that hard work, all that luck, and Southampton just go psychologically, they're like, oh, what are we meant to do? How do you pick yourself up for the second half?
We were very guilty for a long time of doing the opposite, weren't we? Yeah. We were very guilty of being the team who were brilliant, would score two goals and then concede two goals. Yeah. And we, as fans, we'd be like, oh, fucking hell. You know what I mean? But I think, you know, a lot of people touch on the kind of the motivational side of the manager and kind of go like, oh, look at him. You know, not our fans, other fans kind of saying, you know, look at him on the touchline being like an idiot and stuff, and, you know, atmosphere, FC, all that type of stuff. But I think those types of things are where those moments happen, because I think it makes me think of, I remember Henri talking about Guardiola on Sky Sports a few years ago, saying he always said, like, I'll coach you to get to the final third, and then in the final third it's all on you guys up front. And I think there's an element of that with it, where it's like, I'll show you how to press people and how to, you know, tactically set up and defend and all that, but every now and again you've just got to be brilliant. And you are brilliant. You know, that's why you're at Liverpool, because you're a brilliant footballer. And it's moments like that, you know, where, and the manager's very magnanimous in praising the players for that. He never kind of takes credit for them doing mad things like that. Even when we have players like Coutinho, he's always very, no, like, he's world class.
That's why he talks about the mentality monsters, doesn't he? You know, he gives them the tools, but then he's constantly surprised by how the in-game management of these lads off their own back decides games.
Well, I don't think, just as an aside on Mane, I don't think, and it's weird that it's happened this, I don't think he gets enough credit for just how good he is. And I don't just mean from our fan base, I just mean generally speaking around world football. Like, I can't think of many people who play left side who are brilliant, you know, as brilliant as he is, say, and you forget that he's just, you know, he has all those different elements to his game. Like, he's not just a left winger, you know, he's a lad who can come inside and play number 10. He actually could do a pretty good shift up front, and as you say, in terms of his mentality, you know, you see that video a couple of weeks ago where Robbo comes in and he's in the swim, he says, like, you know, without me doing your running for you yesterday, you were terrible, you know what I mean? And like, he's got all those elements to it. Like, I think he knows himself, you know quietly gets the golden boot joint with Salah last year, and we're all sat there going, oh, fucking hell, yeah, like, you have scored that many goals, and you've all the kind of, as Tom says, all the challenges he's had and put in front of him, in terms of, we've just got this lad who's just scored 30 goals a season, so now you're going to play left wing. Oh, Sam, I'll just keep scoring more goals, and I'll just set up brilliant crosses and stuff.
They're important goals, though. Paul, he did it all last season. He's the fella who gets the first goal in the games. He's the fella who goes, right, do we need to do something? We need to play faster. Bang, I'm gone. I'll pick the ball up and I'll go. And it's interesting. Last season, we put Mo Salah in that attacking at number 9 role, and we went, you can do the job there, and Salah was fantastic. But then we've played Mane there, and he's been just as good at picking the ball up and freeing up all these different players. And I can't wait to see his progression, because he's still got more to come.
That's the thing for me, is that I call him world class, and I think he is. But I think he's like, he's missing 2 months of the season. Like, you know, it's cumulatively, sometimes it's a longer spell, sometimes it's a few games, like mid-season, where he has a bit of a lull. And I remember saying this about Phil Coutinho, that the season he left us was the first season he was on to do a full season at that level for us. And I think you've got to do it for a full season to be truly, truly world-class. I think Mane's got all of the attributes. And at the peak of his powers, he's unplayable, which makes him, for me, he's absolutely world-class. But the last lingering doubt is, if he just does a full season like this, I think he'll score 30 goals in all competitions, easy.
Yeah.
You know, I think you know, because he's well on the way already, having missed the start of the season. So I think this is absolutely. There's a little concern. Was last season as good as it gets for Mane? But again, I think there's areas of his game that he can grow.
I think with Mane as well, he's constantly improving. So I think that first season Salah came in, he obviously had an incredible season. I think last season it freed up Mane more, because teams were being more conscious of Salah. And I think now with Mane, I think he's worked on an area of his game that he was lacking in his finishing. Mm-hmm. I think against Napoli last year, the last Champions League group stage game at home, I think his finishing was quite woeful in that game. He missed some chances that could have come and hurt us.
Absolutely.
And I think since then he's really gone to grips with his finishing. Obviously, it wasn't just that goal against Southampton. His second goal against Chelsea was brilliant as well. Yeah. And I think he's really working on his finishing. And you can see week in, week out, he's becoming an even better player. And I think it's brilliant to see. We don't just have individuals now. I think the front three as a whole, together, individually and as a front three, are becoming unplayable.
Well, they've always been, you know, we always talk about the units.
Yeah.
But you now have, you know, two seasons ago, it was Mo Salah was the absolute main man. And now we're saying we've now got the ability for any one of those lads on any given day to step up and be the best player on the pitch.
My only fear with it slightly, and it can be a double-edged sword, depending on going off what you've just said about this season, but my only fear with him is that who we play left side when we don't play him.
Yeah.
In a sense of, we play Regi and he's looked good in spells, but he's not the same player. And I think whether you'd accommodate that by changing formation and stuff, but I think that leads to us again resting the other two lads and still playing Sadio. So I don't know how we get around that. But you know, on the other hand, you can look at that the other way, as you're saying, Paul, and go, well, all right, well, maybe he plays up front number 9 because he can hold the ball up brilliantly. And that leads to him getting 30 goals a season, and means that Firmino and Salah are fresh for other games. I don't know.
It's interesting. Just quickly, just to refresh it, you know, at Liverpool, 13 goals in all comps in his first season, 20 in all comps in his second, 10 and 10 in the Premier League and the Champions League that season, and 26 in all last season, 22 and 4 in the Champions League.
Well, so, without pens as well.
And also take nothing away from Firmino, but his assist record.
I think much more to come. And if he's like that, if he had that to his locker, because that's one of the things that's been missing. You know, Klopp was asked that last season about shooting from outside the box. We shoot less from outside the box. I know is he outside the box? Is he just, you know, he's on the edge of it? Shooting from distance, they're game changers.
Yeah.
You know, we need players to take the ball by the horns in those kind of situations. That's how you break deadlocks, and that's what you require from your best players on the pitch. So no. Brilliant from Sadio Mane. Second half, Jack, much, much better. Bobby Firmino in particular came alive. I'm so glad that the chance that he misses, that's the one that's set up by Mane, I'm glad that doesn't come back to haunt us, because he should finish it. But again, he then goes on, and I think the one that he does score is actually a much more difficult goal to score ultimately.
I think under Klopp, it's known that Firmino is the system for us, and I think I personally think the lack of pre-season for him and playing in the Copa America has helped him. I think obviously we've seen with Firmino in the past, obviously he comes back from pre-season as most people would, very unfit, and it's taken him the first few weeks of the season to get in, but I think he's come back the top of his game. I think first three games of the season he's been absolutely phenomenal. I think he changed the game on Wednesday. I think he changed the game in the second half on Saturday, and I think he's a world-class player, and I think we're looking at it, and if we can get more goals and assists from him this season, then the front three, just think how unplayable it would be.
Bobby Firmino has done already, nearly scored two of the best goals I've seen ever, nearly, they've been saved, and it's just little flashes of brilliance, beating a man so easily. And the one thing I noticed him doing quite a bit in that game is just letting the ball run. So the pass, when he scored, he let the ball run, he kind of jumped over it and then brought it round, and it fools defenders because they're like, where's the ball going? Oh, he's passed me. And he did it so many times. He nearly scored after he'd scored his goal, and then he scored a bit later on, let the ball run through to his feet, and I think it got saved, I can't remember. But it's just little things that you do when you're on top of your game. You know where the ball's going to be, you know that the ball's perfectly weighted, you know exactly what run to make, you know exactly what pass to make. And I mean, that goal that he scores is unbelievable. He's jinking. You're like, now he's got to play it to Trent. I'm waiting for a pass out to Trent.
Mo Salah was fucking raging that he didn't get the pass. That it's one of those where you're like, well done. good goal. Yeah,
that's a great finish. Yeah. He beats two Southampton defenders and the goalkeeper, Nessos, and then he does some mad dance in the corner. You're thinking, you're back, mate. And it was really interesting, actually. Milner went over to Sadio Mane because the press, and I mean, we'd done it all game, but the press that Sadio Mane puts in there and then gives the ball to Firmino. Take not away from Firmino, but it's Mane making
Milner's celebration. Running over to the celebration reminds me of that bit at the end of Bad Boys where Will Smith says, "That's how you drive from now on. That's how you drive. That's how you finish. That's how you finish." Like, I love it. I, the whole thing. Firmino, Jack, reminds me this season of Firmino from two seasons ago. I think, you know, I think last season, I don't know whether part of this was fatigue or part of it was, you know, we changed his role because we went to the 4-2-3-1, we played him in the 10 a bit, and I think that psychologically had a bit of a negative impact on his all-round game. But he's playing like the false nine, but he's also playing like a number nine more. And we saw that two seasons ago where he's happy to be the guy who sticks the ball in the back of the net again. He's happy to be the guy who, when the situation demands it, he will drive forward, he will run the ball. He's not just being the Bobby Firmino, the creator. He also wants to be Bobby Firmino who guarantees that he gets 20 goals this season.
I think I saw a quote on Twitter the other day which I think epitomises Bobby Firmino. That was, I think it was, if you watch Bobby Firmino, if you watch the game, you don't see Bobby Firmino. If you watch Bobby Firmino, this, you see the game. And I think, to be honest, he has been awesome this season. The start of this season, if he can keep this up, I think for years Liverpool supporters have been like, you know what, he's the system, and other supporters have been like, hang on, he's nowhere near your best player. But then I think now you start to see, actually, yeah, he came on in the Super Cup final, he changes the game, and I think he's becoming one of them players that the more you watch him, the more you see how top quality he is. And I think I can't emphasise enough how important he is for this football club. And you see when we try different players in that position, it doesn't work the same because the whole system revolves around Firmino, and to see him at this level at the start of the season really, really excites me.
Absolutely. A little shout out to James Milner, who's an absolute warrior. Yeah. His face was just off.
I love that. There's nothing better. I used to have a book, and I think it was Andy Cole had a massive gash on his head playing for England or something like that.
Teddy Butcher.
Yeah, there's just so many.
Andy Cole played for Man United centre forwards, you know,
for England.
Yeah.
But I think it was he was in an England shirt, there's blood all down him, and there's a thing wrapped around his head. It's shades of Martin Skirtle. Yeah. These players, and you're just like, you've just been booted in the head.
Yeah.
Just give it a rest. Go off.
I know.
He's
pissing blood out of his eye, just legs off, gets a couple of stitches, gets a bandage on and legs back on, and just carries on being Milner.
Milner will be brilliant in Hell in a Cell, and he's got the physique for it.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership.
Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Right, listen, we've come this far. We've skirted around it. Let's talk ads, Ian.
Shit, any?
He very much went in the space of like 3 days from being like, oh wow, what a great. Look, Adrian is just fine, isn't he? And I've seen people saying, well, Alisson made a mistake earlier against Leicester last season. It's like, Adrian is fine. He's an absolutely fine backup goalkeeper. He's a good shot stopper. And look, it shouldn't be underestimated, just like the Super Cup, that both with him and without him, like we'd have lost that game. And he almost lost us and won us the game in the same breath, because there's moments in that in the Super Cup where I thought he was just a bit fucking dodgy. Now, I'm not here to dig him out because he's been at the club for about 10 days and all of a sudden he's been thrown in completely into the deep end, and I think largely he's handled it. I think my thing with him, Tom, is that mistake was obviously ludicrously avoidable, and I wonder whether, because he was a bit nervy in the Super Cup, rightly so, he's been dropped in for his first start in a European final for Liverpool, and I wonder whether he's trying to prove how cool he is by being too cool.
Yeah.
And I think in those instances, and maybe ego or arrogance plays a part or whatever, but when you nearly get caught out in the first half doing the same thing, you're just quicker.
Yeah.
And the ball's just got to go out wide. It's got to go over to Trent. It's got to go to whatever. It's just got to not be kicked directly at Danny Ings.
At Danny Ings, exactly. I think it's just him trying to get used to the system. Alisson is perfectly suited to what we do. Edison's perfectly suited to that. Pepe Reina, to an extent, was probably perfectly suited to that. Adrian, not so much. And when he gets the ball to feet, for that goal, you see he's either looking at Gini and he's looking at Fabinho, and they're both pointing a one at my feet. And for some reason, he thinks he can Megs Danny Ings and give it to Fabinho. I don't know what he's trying to do, but it's one of them where he's just not suited to it, and that's fine.
I don't think he's not suited. I think he's all right, but it's just a fucking stupid decision. And it comes down to it where he's trying something. It's not well rehearsed. Yeah. It's not well drilled, which again might not be his entire fault. We've all do, but I always come back to it, like, it's the kind of mistake we make on computer games because ultimately there's no stakes, so you can try things that you've not tried before. Because if you can see the goal, who cares? You know, it's only a laugh. It's a competitive game of football, and it very nearly turns the tables on us in that game.
Yeah.
And all he's got to do, it's fucking obvious, the ball is out to the right. You just open your body up and you move the ball on, and there's no issues. But he holds on to it, and I think whether he's trying to prove himself more confident or whether he thinks he's better than he is. It's a choice of an idiot.
He'll learn
to try and pass
that
it through Danny Ings.
Like, he will definitely learn from that, and I think the players will have come off at the end of the game and gone, you've made us work so much harder in that last 15 minutes because of that.
I mean, Jack, he kind of smiles like and then that smile disappears very quickly because he sees the reaction, and his teammates do not find that funny in any way, shape or form.
You know, we were comfortable, weren't we? We were 2-0 up. We were looking a lot better in the second half, and we'd had our shaky moments during the game. Adrian himself had shaky moments that he got away with, but it also saved us from the corner with Yoshida, where Van Dijk's been caught napping, and I think it's a case of him being on the lager since Wednesday, to be honest with you. I think he wasn't expecting to play, of course. I think he's just been caught napping.
I mean, we could make a defensive case there that, you know, if his ankle's still not right, maybe he's been told, maybe, like, he can't be. I don't know. I mean, the simple point is, you know, whether he's slowed, his reactions are slowed because of pardon and painkillers or whatever. We don't know, and we'll never know.
Is that down to the defenders then? If we know, okay, we need to spread faster and we need to make ourselves ready for the
just
back.
He needs to kick the ball for fucking Trent Alexander-Arnold. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's a fucking ridiculously stupid.
I was waiting for Mignolet's heel turn on Twitter, you know, for the Masters wrap. Not easy, is it?
I
think it could be the making of them, to be honest. I agree with you that it's a bad mistake, but I think, again, you forget that we've had a whole season of watching quite possibly the best goalkeeper in the world, one of top three certainly, do that, and it's a unique position, it's a unique ask of our goalies. You know, we need to be good with the feet and stuff, and I actually think he is all right with his feet. I don't, you know, he's not world class, but I think he's decent. But as you say, I think it then the fact that he's done that and fucked up makes his job easier. He can just go, all right, whenever I get this, I'll just boot it out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it becomes...
You see it at every level of footy. When you're trying to prove how good you are, often it you just play the game too slowly, because really you just keep like 5-a-side, 7-a-side, even 11-a-side. You should just be moving the ball, doing the simple things. Whereas if you want to try and show how good you are, you actually kind of want the ball at your feet. You want everyone, all the eyes to be on you to show you do this. And my sneaking suspicion is that he's just trying to show how well he fits in a bit too much, whereas the situations where, again, just don't. And I think that you're right. I think that'll come. And if he'd been there for pre-season, I think he probably just knows. Klopp is so regimented in how the defence does things in situations that you do. It's blindingly obvious to us because we've just watched Alisson for the season, and back prior to that, I've watched. Even Mignolet or Karius would have made hopefully largely sometimes occasionally those decisions better.
Wouldn't have kicked it out for a corner.
Yeah, no, I know, just let it run.
I think John's right though, in terms of it'll be the making of him, because I mean, people are saying, oh, you can't equate it to Alisson's mistake because he'll do, like, Alisson was so much better, but you've got to sit there and go, alright, now you know Alisson knew then what his limit was, and he stopped doing it, he stopped fucking about until he got his confidence, and then he did it. And but it was interesting, the shift in everyone's thought process when Alisson had the ball after that, though, in terms of where I was stood, everyone there was just nervy. It took me back to Mignolet. Everyone was just nervy when Adrian had the ball, and it took me back to Mignolet and the way that everyone would be like, get rid. And just before the end of the game, I was like, get rid, and hopefully that doesn't creep in, because we give Alisson a pass, why can't we give Adrian a pass?
You're right. It's tweaking, isn't it, Jack? It's, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be prepared to say, like, don't totally give up on what you're doing, but you have to be a bit sharper than what he's doing, because it's all well and good saying that, well, Alisson made a mistake, but Adrian made that mistake in the first half. That should have been the warning. Yeah. Just move the ball quicker, mate. Whereas, again, it comes down to, we all see it, I think. You try to make up for your mistakes by doing something more difficult instead of just doing the fundamentals.
I think what's important to think of as well is keepers are going to make mistakes. It's the most difficult position to play on the pitch. I think obviously the problem with Karius and Mignolet was it wasn't just the odd mistake; it happened again and again and again. And I think
were also our first choice goalkeepers.
Exactly, and I think to turn around to Adrian now and rule him out is completely ridiculous, because I think he's had his one mistake like Alisson had last year, and Adrian is nowhere near Alisson's level. Let's be very clear on that. But I think with Adrian, it's, look, mate, you've had one mistake. You can't afford to keep making them at Liverpool. Do the simple things right. Don't bother with the complicated stuff, and you'll be liked here, and that's all he needs to do. He needs to take that mistake and move on from it.
Absolutely, I completely agree on that. Go on, Johnny.
I was going to say the pre-season thing as well, is I think, again, you've got to put both of those mistakes, as in Alisson at Leicester and stuff, in context. You know, he's just played the season for Roma, where the pace is much slower. Behind, you know, and all of a sudden it's like, oh shit, I'm in the Prem. I can't just play football. I have to, you know, boot it long. So that's why goalies in the Prem do that. Same for Adrian, you know, playing a season behind, you know, West Ham centre halves. you know, I'm again taking nothing away from West Ham, like, but they don't defend like we do, but they also don't have centre backs who play football like we do. You know, they're not, you know, at times we just play with Van Dijk at the back. Yeah. You know what I mean? And you're happy to give him the ball, and you're basically just a sweeper in case he misses it or has to needs an option to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And he won't be used to that, as you say, you know, to come in and literally have been at the club 10 days when they've had Andy Lonergan playing goal for half the, you know, half a pre-season. It's a completely different thing. And I agree with you in as much as saying it's his mistake. It's not, I don't think it's the centre-halves.
Yeah.
But I also think, as well, as we've had so much change in that back line and the goalie over the last 5 weeks, that
there's nothing for us as fans to be gained from writing him off, because look, he's going to have to be the goalie for the next few weeks, and hopefully we've just got to trust that he will sharpen up. The tough thing, sorry John, just to move it on, because I think the tough thing is how that, the impact that has on the game, because there's no need for that game to be end as nervy as it does, and that's what it does, and I think that's why it's something he's going to have to improve, and he's going to have to deal with, because the weight of expectations at Liverpool is bigger than anything he will have experienced in his life. Because, you know, we go from the watching it on the telly, the camera's cut to Ralph Hasenhüttl 2-0, and his head's in his hands. He's like, well, my game plan's gone, the game's gone, 2-0, it's dead and buried. It's far more likely to be 3-4 than it is to be any other reverse scoreline. But it opens the door to Southampton, and, you know, Danny Ings, you know, is an inspired substitution then. He adds lots of pace and determination. He has that shot that just goes over the bar, and he misses an absolute sitter from a yard out. And, you know, this is why we're lucky.
I'm still speechless from that chance. I don't think I've spoken since it. I sat down with my head in my hands, because you sat there and you're going, we're being comfortable, we're watching Liverpool play fantastic football, the attack's we're just creating chances for fun, midfield starting to come into it, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's getting his feet on the ball and running and blah blah blah, and then that happens, and then suddenly the crowd's up, we're quiet in the ground, Southampton are going for it, believing they've got it, and they're playing with the same game plan they had in the first 15 and just throwing men at it, going. Danny Ings should put that away. I've got a sneaking suspicion he misses it just to,
just to be in the Liverpool Masters team exactly. In 10 years' time.
And just purely because later on, after that, he just didn't even press anymore. He was just strolling around the pitch, and I was like, go ahead, Danny, you know what's up. You've been gifted one. It was kind of like, who scored for the Fulham. Yeah, and he's just like, I don't want to put this in. Danny Ings didn't want to put that in. Danny Ings wants us to win the league.
Yeah.
And it is one of them where it was senseless running. Everyone ended up being knackered.
It takes the shine off it. You know, the talking point is like, God, we've got away with one rather than Liverpool. Ground out a really good. It changes the conversation a little bit, because it's mad, because obviously the game ends and, you know, Klopp's now the fastest ever Liverpool manager to 300 points, which is a phenomenal record when you think about it. When you consider that only a year or two removed from people doing like the comparisons with Brendan Rodgers and their win percentages and all this kind of stuff. Oh, is he any better than Brendan Rodgers? Yes, conclusively, yeah. Miles better than Brendan Rodgers. But apparently, Dan Kenner took to Twitter, our good friend and football statistical analyst. That's the most XG Liverpool have conceded in a game since we lost 4-1 to Spurs in 2017, which is largely credited as being, John, the turning point under Jurgen Klopp in terms of how Liverpool defenders are units, etc., etc. That is, you know, that we talked about it, and Dan himself mentions it. We've been lucky, I think, at times this season. We have ridden our luck. Great. I'm all for Liverpool riding the luck, but obviously the point I think Dan's making in that is that you can ride your luck to a point, and you need to be able to ride your luck in a good season. But this is probably from now on, Liverpool do need to tighten up, sharpen up, you know, take that luck and then start to put some real work behind it.
We do, and you were saying before about them playing the front three again after midweek. I think the front three are carrying the team at the minute a little bit. You know, as we kind of said, you know, Firmino and Salah, and, you know, they all look really bright after the summer they've had and stuff, and, you know, they've clearly all had different summers, but we need to do some work, I think, on the midfield for me. A lot of people have focused on the high line and stuff, and for me, you know, there's loads of things you can go into with that, and you say, you know, this, that and the other, you know, VAR, offside trap, all that things. But I look at the midfield and just think we need to somehow address some issues around that, and it's difficult because, you know, there's so many arguments around the things like around Henderson and, you know, the lads who play there and stuff, and, you know, we had the whole Brexit midfield thing last year and stuff, which actually worked in our favour, weirdly. But I just think it's I just think it's a legs thing at the minute. I mean, you look at Fabinho with cramp, and he's never struck me as a player who, having watched him at Liverpool, can do a full 90 of running, if you know what I mean. He's not that type of player. But we need to, I think, look at that and maybe look at just getting lads in who can run. Mm-hmm. And, as you know, we've spent ages talking about why Chamberlain's had a good return to action. It'd be like, he's not that player at the minute, is he? You know, he's not the lad who's going to do 90 minutes, run box to box. You need your Hendersons and stuff. And I wonder if it's slightly around that, you know, and a lot of the teams we've played so far, like, you look at Norwich play football, Southampton, you know, are fit, you know, they're tired, but they were fit. The teams who run at you and want to attack, and that's the worst type of thing you can have if you haven't got a big midfield.
It's find the balance, I think, you know, Fabinho, I think, was overrun at times against Chelsea, or a lot of times against Chelsea, and against Norwich as well, and whether that's just we're trying to commit too many men forward to make sure that, you know, we're still the threat going the other way. And I think that balance works better when you're coming up against teams who are not looking to take the game to you, because you need to commit as many men to attack as possible. We're going to have far more of those games, I think, this season. Far more it's like, you know, we had to convert to being a possession-based side last season because you can't counter-attack against teams that aren't looking to attack you in the first place. Well, as we started the season, we've played nothing but teams that actually aren't afraid to have a go.
Yeah.
Which is probably a bit unusual for what we're probably going to face as the season progresses. But
I think John touched on it before. It is so hard without having training time. But Jurgen Klopp will have said to these, look, we get through this, push, get your results, and then you've got a week off every single game now. Mm-hmm. For like, is it three games in a row, I think, maybe? Or I know it's defo two games in a row. You've got a week in between. Have that push, and I wouldn't be surprised if against Arsenal he plays at full strength. Well, he's got to.
No, 100%.
But again, week after that, full strength. Week after that, full strength. Because you're going through now and you go, right, you've pushed, your legs are knackered, we'll have a little bit of a recuperation leading up into Arsenal. It's not going to be that tough for a good few weeks.
Yeah.
So we'll have our recuperation. Klopp can now get them on the training pitch and go, you fucked up there, because you've not had the chance to. You fucked up there. Let's make sure we rectify it. The one thing that I'm really happy about that happens throughout all these games, and you spoke about muscle memory before, John, it's the offside trap. We've got that down to an absolute T. Even with changing your back line and your centre halves and what have you, our back line is spot on every set piece. It's spot on, and for that to be so well drilled in the team, all it's going to take is us getting on the training pitch and drilling out everything else.
I completely agree with that, and I think, again, it boils down to this thing for me, is that there's plenty of room for improvement. It's early in the season. The mission this week was to win the Super Cup and to get 3 points on the board. And when you look at the Premier League table, and obviously we're recording this Monday morning, United to play Wolves on Monday night, Liverpool, only two teams have got 100% records in the season. Like, that's how quickly it's all been whittled down. It's two teams at the top end of the league on 6 points, and we're one of them, likely to be three if Man United get the results against Wolves. But that's where the City have already dropped points, which we'll come on to, because we've said we're going to do these shows for free on Mondays. We're going to a little weekend roundup, plenty of action over the weekend. But John, there's only one game that really warrants any discussion. City Spurs, Man City winning that game, and I put this on Twitter, and a few people misinterpreted the meaning because it's Twitter. Man City winning that game with a late goal was the most inevitable thing ever. And if anyone watched that game, Spurs were... Well, I don't know if Spurs were terrible, but Man City were unreal. They absolutely battered Spurs, all, particularly the second half. They couldn't get anywhere near them. They got the goal from the corner, and are they going to kick on? No. City just continued to batter them. Them scoring a late winner was exactly what was going to happen in that game. And I, without getting drawn into the VAR debate, I'm entitled to enjoy that, because I see City as our biggest rivals, and if they're going to drop points for VAR, I'm sure Liverpool will drop points because of it later on in the season. But this weekend, I'm absolutely fucking buzzing off my tits with that.
Yeah, and so we should be. You know, he made some brilliant points last night. I was watching Danny Murphy on Match of the Day. He makes brilliant points about it, ruining the entertainment value. I've had a fucking brilliant weekend.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was absolutely laughing my tits off yesterday at that, and just enjoying it, because it shows you that it doesn't all account for everything, does it? You know, like, all the money side of it, or everything they've got, the fact they've got the best manager, the best players, fucking doesn't matter, lads. You know, if it's 3 millimetres offside, it's fucking, you know, or it's handball or whatever, that's what it is. And great. Because that's a leveller. And, you know, again, it comes back to it. Like, well, it's black and white now. That's the rule. If it's a handball, it's a handball. And people have, you know, have lost themselves. And in the whole thing of the spirit of the game and stuff. I get all that and I agree with a lot of it. But the point is at the minute, that's the rule. So
the rule's fucking stupid. Yeah. But the thing is, it's going to bite us on the ass. City will get away with things because of that as well. But it
comes down to, and I put the tweet out, the problem at the moment is you're going to end, and apparently someone told me Jamie Redknapp said this, like, it'll balance itself out over the course of the season. That's not the point of VAR. Yeah. The point of VAR is that you're not meant to have it. Like, you know, that it was meant to be an end to this. Oh, don't worry about it. It'll all level itself out. You're right. Boils down to interpretations. I would be, let hands up, who would be fucking raging if we had a goal cost because of that, the way that's been given. Nobody. I mean, again, it comes down to it because they're looking at it, and I get it. It's just that
it just flicks off his arm, but it deflects into the path of a City player and he scores. Rule is, if it hits an hand and it goes in, or if it's a shot on target, in that phase of play, if the ball goes in, then it's not a goal. Yeah. Defence is reset, then it's fine, apparently, which is mad because there's loads of interpretations. If it's handball and it's not a goal scoring opportunity, you can wave it on. It's stupid.
It's not a VAR argument, this. It's a rule argument, isn't it? And it is absolute, for me, it's insanity because if it just hits you, this is the problem with it, and this is the problem with the analysis. We saw this in the World Cup, how many penalties were given. I think was it Iran Portugal, where there's one that I always reference, it flicks over someone's head and it just bounces off it. And it's like, how is that meant to be? And when you look at it forensically and you see ball strike arm, and if you're making ball strike arm the rule, then fair play.
They're making it consistent now, Paul. Yeah, that's the one thing.
The problem is they're making it consistent, but it's not across Europe. So we saw in the Super Cup, obviously, we were denied a penalty because the rule isn't the same across UEFA as it is in England. And I think it's something they need to look at because it's going to cause, you know, Man City, they like to moan, they like to think that they're, you know, everyone's against them.
I
and
did
all
enjoy
sorts. And
reference in the Super Cup.
I just think...
Nice to know he was watching us.
We will get things against us, but I'm glad it's happened to Man City first because there's no one that deserves it more than them.
The thing with City is we've got to take from that, yes, we got, like, Spurs got lucky with that, and by proxy Liverpool got lucky by that. You're saying how good City were and how good they're going to be throughout the season, and I think the players need to go now, that's how good City are against Spurs. We need to carry on. And everyone would say, oh, stop watching City, stop caring. Last season I was watching two games of football a weekend because it was Liverpool and then it was Man City, and I cared about them both equally. Yeah. I supported whoever City played against. So it is one of them where we're going to watch it through and it's going to be exhausting.
That was terrifying about that, because I made a point. If you're going to watch City games, only watch them play the best teams, the ones that are the most likely to have a game in, because if you're watching them, and I know they actually drop points in the most unlikely game, than Leicester and Newcastle and whatever you had last season. But, you know, you can't live your life that way. But so I was in and out, to be honest. I didn't really watch the first half. I was playing with the kids, I dropped in, I watched a bit, I had my dinner on. I didn't even see the last 5 minutes. I had it on the radio while we were having dinner, which makes me sound like I was growing up in the 1940s on the wireless. I objectively absolutely enjoyed it because it was just a nice dramatic twist to the whole weekend sport. It was great.
It's an element of modern football eating itself a little bit, isn't it? Because they are the epitome of modern football in the sense of the money, the players, the athleticism, but also the Prem. And part of me really loves that because it's so absurd. Mm-hmm. But I think the other thing, and you've made this point in the years I've watched this show, you've made this point frequently, is that the thing I like about it is that we've now got 6 points at the top of the league quietly. All right, it's 2 games in. But what I like is that the story now is City Spurs. It's not Liverpool. It's not Adrian and a mistake. All the focus is on. And that will be his press conference this week.
Yeah.
Going into next week, that'll be all the headlines. Going into the next weekend, that'll be all the build up to their next game. And all the focus, even though we're top of the league, goes on them.
Yeah.
And that's great. And they've got to fight back towards being...
I think with that being said, it does put a tiny bit more pressure on us against Arsenal, because I think obviously we're both sat top of the league. If Man United drop points at the Molyneux tonight, which is kind of likely, we saw how Wolves did against the top six last year. But I think if they drop points tonight, obviously it's who's going to slip up first, us or Arsenal. Yeah. I think, to be fair, mate, psychologically, we
need to be wary of delving too much into analysis of things at this early point in the season. It's a constant reminder, 10 games.
give the league 10 games and see where it pans out. But like, take encouraging notes along the way. I think that's a brilliant thing that we have Arsenal so early on, because again, it gives you a chance to be effectively the only team who's got an unbeaten record at the start of the season already. It gives you a chance to have that advantage to start to accrue some points, but no, I think so far so good. The point is for bringing it back to Liverpool is that to take 6 points out of six without being anything like the team that Liverpool can be,
and winning just, a trophy,
and winning silver along the way is a very, very positive start to the league campaign. Listen, if you want more chat around the league, we've literally got a show called Around the League. It's on the redmentv.com. It's going to be talking, I'm sure, in much more depth and detail around the City stuff and the VAR stuff and everything else that happened this weekend. I'm sure Pukki once again nailing the goals. Apparently he scored more as many Premier League hat-tricks as Bergkamp and Ronaldo. Jack Reeve and Talk Norwich were very happy to push that one this weekend. Diab getting a win in their derby against Watford, the Marco Silva derby, and all that stuff. So yeah, go over to the redmentv.com, sign up for an amazing show every single week, and we've got a Reds News Roundup show on there as well. And when there's two games a week, this show will be your midweek show on there as well, and an instant match reaction 10-15 minutes after every Liverpool game, going straight onto the website. So yeah, sign up, it's completely free for the first month. You get video and you get it in podcast form as well in your native podcast apps. What better time to sign up than with Liverpool top of the league and the Super Cup holders and the champions of Europe. Anyway, we'll see it all there. Thank you for watching, for listening, and for subscribing. Ta-da.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.